Welcome to SROA Soundboard, a podcast for radiation oncology administrators. Here's your host, Tammy McCausland.
I'm joined today by Ralph Gelati, who works at Rutgers University as Assistant Vice President for Organizational Leadership in the Office of the Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs. Ralph has authored several books on various leadership topics. Welcome, Ralph.
Hi, Tammy. Thanks so much for having me here today.
It's a pleasure to have you with me. Let's start by having you tell me how you got interested in leadership.
So I was really involved as a student leader during my undergraduate years. And then eventually, as I went through my master's program and then my doctoral program, started to really become interested in the scholarship of leadership and really understanding more fully how leadership and communication come together in important ways. And over the years, I've had the opportunity to take on a number of different leadership roles myself, and have had the opportunity to help support leaders at my institution and other institutions. And all of those different experiences have really converged in this great space where I get to study leadership, help advise leaders, and think more deeply about how leadership development happens.
That's very interesting background and very timely for our topic today. What is leadership development to you and why does it matter?
So it's a big question. And I think we could sort of take a look around us and we are exposed to immense pressures and challenges. Of course, in radiation oncology and in healthcare and in academic health centers and in higher education and across the globe, the challenges can be overwhelming. And to me, when we see the number of challenges and pressures and frustrations, it points to the need for those who can enact change, those who can influence behaviors, those who can sort of move our organizations forward as we think about the kind of change that we're engaged in. So it demands leadership. When we think about leadership development, we often in our office at Rutgers talk about the importance of capacity building. How do we build capacity for those who are engaged in the kind of influence that's needed in our organizations? So it matters because we are faced with any number of challenges and opportunities that require thoughtful, principle-centered, and people-centered leadership.
Do you think we're experiencing a crisis in leadership generally and in healthcare specifically?
So, Tammy, it's a loaded question because one of the research papers I worked on is on the social construction of crisis. So who gets to call something a crisis? And by labeling it a crisis, what does that actually do for those who are recipients of the crisis? So are we experiencing a crisis? I think it depends on how you're defining a crisis. I do think we are situated in this moment in time where there is tremendous change and there are any number of pressures that leaders and colleagues at our organizations are facing. And part of that might be described as sort of the post-pandemic change that organizations across the board are experiencing right now. Who are we? Who do we want to become? How do we retain talent? And how do we restore trust in the work that we do? As I think about this broadly in higher education, the data points a really sobering picture of declining confidence in higher education and in formal institutions writ large. So I think when you look at the data, that seems to be a crisis. It's a crisis that has reputational implications. It's a crisis that demands leadership attention, and it's a crisis that requires an immediate response.
Have you found that organizations understand why leadership development is important, and do they do it well?
So it's interesting. If you look at the leadership development literature, there are a number of sectors that have taken leadership development seriously. One of the most widely studied is the military, and looking at the ways in which they develop leaders and develop leadership capacity to focus on the high reliability of the services they provide. and to think about the sustainability of what it is that they're engaged in and the effectiveness of it. Within higher education and in healthcare, I think it's commonly understood that we have placed less of an emphasis on leadership development than other sectors, but I do see that that's changing. I see that we are seeing an investment in resources for programs and coaching services and resources that can help to build leadership capacity, which seems to be moving in the right direction in terms of the kinds of leadership opportunities that we need in our organization.
So why do you think healthcare lagged behind historically in terms of leadership development, and now there's a catch-up, if you can call it that?
Yeah, so I'm more familiar with higher education than healthcare writ large, but I do think in the academic health space and across higher ed, we often have recruited leaders who are subject matter experts, who are really skilled in their unique disciplines, in their unique methodologies, in their unique clinical areas of expertise, and will reward and promote individuals based on this subject matter expertise. However, the organizations that these individuals are tasked with leading are immensely complex, are huge operations with people at the core of the operations, each of whom have different expectations. And there's a need for a broad suite of cross-cutting competencies for leaders to engage in that go beyond one subject matter expertise. So the need for leadership development and effective leadership is critical because you need that sort of deep vertical expertise, but you also need the expertise to lead horizontally.
That's a very good assessment. I've seen that in startup culture where people who started with an organization early, and as the organization grows, they reward for seniority and also for what you said, subject matter expertise, but they don't necessarily train the people. Just because you're a good worker or an expert in your field doesn't mean you're a good manager and then leader.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a good, interesting conundrum, I think. How can leaders pursue leadership development both informally and formally in the workplace?
So I really like that question. And I actually really like that you focus on formally and informally, because it's very easy to default to the formal training and development mechanisms that organizations might have in place to support leadership development. Formal leadership development programs, retreats, and workshops. If your organization offers any kind of leadership coaching model where you could benefit from the services of a certified coach, we're seeing lots of opportunities in that space across organizations right now, which is exciting. I do think there are also formal opportunities across consortia that are made available. So for you to participate in leadership development programs with other colleagues in the field and perhaps across healthcare or across higher education, I think those opportunities are tremendous, and to take advantage of those. There are also any number of informal opportunities. Perhaps the one that we focus on the most in our office is to treat yourself as the subject of your own leadership inquiry. So to engage in this reflective practice where you are having conversations or leading meetings or pursuing change or having a performance review conversation with a colleague while also viewing yourself from the balcony, taking stock of what's working well, how am I showing up? And if faced with this situation again in the future, what might I do differently? So in this spirit of having sort of a laboratory of leadership development, taking advantage of those formal and informal opportunities for leadership growth, where you can be self-reflective and where you could think about what I might do differently if faced with a similar situation in the future. That's where leadership development happens.
Your point about self-reflection actually leads right into my next question, which is how can healthcare leaders self-reflect and self-assess to make sure they continue to grow and develop as leaders, and I guess by extension, to model leadership to those they're leading?
Yeah, so I think there are a whole bunch of assessments on the marketplace that are available to leaders. I had a chance to co-edit a volume with my colleague Marcy Levy-Shankman, and it was on the use of assessments and instruments for leadership development. And we wrote about and had a number of authors who wrote about a whole bunch of assessments and tools in the marketplace. So I think you could take advantage of any of those assessments to self-assess or to gather input from others around your strengths and areas for improvement as a leader. I think that the self-reflection piece does require you to first think about your why, think about your core philosophy that guides you as a leader, to identify your strengths and areas for improvement as a leader, which some of those assessments that I alluded to previously would give you some language around. And then the third is to engage in this reflective practice, to think about how I'm showing up in my leadership pursuits and what I might do differently next time based on what I learned from that situation. And then the final step of that is committing to some sort of plan for leadership development. So this is a framework we talk about in our Guide for Leaders in Higher Education book, where you begin with your why, assess your strengths and areas for improvement, engage in reflective practice, and then commit to a plan for development. And that process is ongoing, it's cyclical, it's iterative. And as you continue to grow as a leader, that philosophy might change. Your strengths and areas for improvement might evolve based on the muscles you're flexing, based on the challenges you're exposed to, and your ability to engage in reflective practice will likely also mature as you continue to do this more frequently and make it a habit.
So that's a
So
good
that's the process that we work through when we're coaching leaders in our office.
point about the idea of making it a habit. So what if someone comes to you and they're very interested in this self-reflection part, but they say, I'm so overwhelmed with the amount of actual work I have to do, I don't really have time. All right, it's hard to find time for self-reflection. How would you respond to their concern?
I hear you. I teach this and I find it hard myself to practice some of this. Find time in whatever modality makes the most sense for you. So for me, much of the self-reflection happens when I'm either commuting to or from work and I have a little sliver of time there to actually do the thinking that's needed, or when I'm exercising in the morning. So if you could find even just a few minutes to pose some critical questions around your development, your goals, and what you might do differently next time. Find just a few minutes and whatever space is most available to you to engage in that self-reflection work. I've worked with a number of leaders who have really interesting practices very early in the morning or right before bed, where they'll journal or they'll reflect or they'll jot down some notes in their phone app to just sort of engage in the reflection that's needed to continue to deepen in their leadership development. But I hear you. The complication is that the role that leaders play is, as I mentioned previously, the challenges are overwhelming and these schedules are so jam-packed. But if we're not taking care of ourselves and if we're not doing the reflection that's needed, we may not be as effective as we'd like to be in our leadership pursuits.
It seems that developing future leaders would be a key part of leadership development. So, how can organizations and their leaders identify and develop those future leaders?
So that speaks to the heart of why our office exists at Rutgers. I think one of the great tests of a leader's effectiveness is their ability to nurture and cultivate the development of other leaders around them, to sort of pay it forward so that you're focusing on. I know we previously, Tammy, had a chance to talk about succession planning. How are you ensuring that you are building capacity around you by empowering others, by creating opportunities for development. And I think this will look different for each of us depending on the organizations that we are working in. But part of it is marshaling talent, looking out for who around you you could invite to participate in certain projects, who you could have one-on-one conversations with that are developmental in nature. I'm a huge advocate for strengths-based leadership. So even though we're not going to change the job descriptions of colleagues that are reporting to us, are there ways that they can engage in their work that truly aligns with their talents and strengths so that they can be most effective in what they do? So it's going to look different depending on your goals and depending on the teams that you're leading. But I think it highlights a key part of your question, the ability to build and support the development of your colleagues into becoming their own leaders is, I think that's one of the best gifts a leader can instill on their team.
And you've kind of alluded to this already, but I'm going to ask, do you have two or three actionable tips that can help leaders get focused on leadership development?
So two or three, I think the ones I'd probably highlight, one is to look at the leadership models around you, both those who are highly effective and those who you might describe as highly ineffective, because there's a lot you can learn from both, and to observe, to note what about their behaviors or practices resonate with you or are ones that you want to avoid in your own practices. So learning from the leadership models around you is a really great strategy and one that I draw upon a whole lot as I think about the really talented folks that I have an opportunity to work with at my institution. The second is to really commit yourself to a realistic number of goals around your areas for growth. I think as we're approaching the end of this year and nearing a new year, there's often the thought of, you know, what are the New Year's resolutions that I want to focus on over this next year? And I sometimes have like a list of 25 to 30. That's way too many, right? What are the one or two or three things that I want to focus on in my leadership development that I can commit to, that I can write down and post somewhere where I'll see them frequently, and that will help to anchor me in my developmental goals? So what is it that I really want to focus on, and to be clear and precise about that? And I think the third is to find the right mentors, to find the right coaches, to find the right colleagues or family members or friends who you can safely confide in, that will be honest with you, that will help to pose the right questions that can help you to grow in the ways that you want to grow.
Those are great tips. I'm sure that SROA's members will appreciate them. Books. There are so many books on leadership published all the time. Do you have a couple of favorites that you would recommend to SROA's members?
What a good question. I'm actually right behind me. I have a whole bunch of books on leadership. So that's such a hard question because it's hard to pick one or two. I think one of the best books I've read that I try to read every year, and some might actually question whether it's a leadership book, is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And I think there's so much to his story about persistence and agency and choice and finding meaning during times of suffering and loss and crisis that can be applied to leaders across the board. And I do think there's also a message of hope that's embedded in that story that we can all turn to during times of solace or challenge. There's a great book called It's about adaptive leadership by Ron Heifetz and colleagues. And the book title is, Practice of Adaptive Leadership. Tools and Tactics for Changing Your Organization and the World. It's a book that I've turned to several times in sort of thinking about the practice of adaptive leadership and the wicked problems that we're faced with as organizations and societies, and how technical solutions may not resolve the kind of wicked systemic problems, the adaptive problems that are plaguing our organization. So it's a great book. And of course, any of the other books, I mean, I've read a bunch by Simon Sinek that are easy reads that that pose some really thoughtful frameworks for leadership development. Or even Dan Pink wrote a book called Drive that talks about motivation and the ways in which people are motivated. Another great resource.
Those are great suggestions. As I mentioned at the outset, you yourself are an author, and every great book has aha moments that readers connect with. Can you share an anecdote or two from people who have shared the aha moments from a book or books you've written?
Thanks for noting that, Tammy. Yes, we've had the pleasure of working on a bunch of different books in our office, focusing on leadership in higher education or in academic health centers. I think I've heard some really humbling feedback about some of the work that came out of one of the books I wrote on crisis leadership in higher education. And a couple of the aha moments are situated around crisis leadership being an imperative for leaders at all levels of the organization. So as we talk about leadership development today, those who hold formal positional authority in your units or in your departments, this topic might resonate. But even if you don't have the biggest title or you're not at the top of the organizational chart in your unit, there are opportunities for demonstrating leadership every single day. So this leadership development topic is an important one for each of us, and crisis leadership in particular, as I write about in the book, is an imperative for all of us. And I actually wrote that book right before COVID. It was published in 2019. So I didn't have any clue as to where we're going as a society when the book was published. And the second aha moment is that there's particularly in decentralized academic institutions, that the countercultural need for agility. That was one of the big things I learned from my research on crisis leadership, that crises demand a quick, agile response. And yet we as organizations are slow moving and deliberative by design. So that makes the work of crisis leadership all the more challenging for our organizations, because when a crisis strikes, we're held to the same expectations as any fast moving large company across the street from us, right? Although by nature, our organizational design is much more consensus driven. We have shared governance. We're slower moving by design.
It's interesting. What's next for you?
We are at Rutgers doing a lot more in the academic continuous improvement space. So we have a team of internal consultants that are doing work across the university as part of our central academic affairs office that's really focusing on academic leadership capacity building and continuous improvement across the institution. So on the professional front, really engaged and invested in that work that's helping our institution to continue to pursue excellence. I am finishing up a book manuscript on the subject of post-crisis leadership. There's a lot of writing done on how to prepare for crisis and what to do in the midst of crisis, but less of a focus on what to do in the aftermath of crisis. And that's a really critical period for learning and discovery and reinvention and healing. And that's one of the models that I turn to in that book, which also might be one of the reasons why I turned to Viktor Frankl and Man's Search for Meaning in one of my book recommendations, because that was an important book that helped to shape some of my thinking for that book. And I think the last thing is just continuing to learn, Tammy. It's such an inflection moment, I think, across the globe right now and across higher ed and healthcare right now, that there's a lot of change underway and to learn from what's working with organizations across the board that can help to shape my professional development and the development of my colleagues.
That's awesome. It was great having you with me today, Ralph.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Tammy, thank you so much. Thanks for the great questions. And to those who are listening, good luck with your leadership development pursuits.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about SROA, visit www.sroa.org.